Mission Kona Podcast, where our focus is on highlighting age group athletes doing amazing things in the triathlon space. My name is Michelle Payne.
And I am Mike Payne. We are husband and wife, amateur triathletes, parents, and self-proclaimed coffee connoisseurs, both working in corporate America.
Mike is also a triathlon coach and recently qualified for Kona in October of 2023.
Michelle completed her first half Ironman in 2021 and plans to race a full Ironman in the near future.
This podcast is a journey to discovering what it takes to be competitive in triathlon, sharing stories, and finding the inspiration to go after challenging but worthwhile goals.
Thanks for joining us. We're glad you're here. Welcome to Mission Kona Podcast, the podcast that highlights top age group athletes and their mission to Kona. My name is Mike.
And I'm Michelle.
And today we have one of those top age group athletes. We have Devin Volk joining us. So Devin is a 25 to 29 year old age group athlete. I want to go through some of his highlights. The last couple of years, if you look at his results on Ironman races, you can see that this guy is incredibly fast. So in 2021, I've got three 70.3 wins, including a age group win at 70.3 Worlds and two 70.3 seconds. And then it looks like he made the jump into Ironman racing, full Ironman racing this year. So in 2022, two Ironman races, full Ironmans. He got third at St. George Worlds in his age group. And then just fresh off of Kona, a second place finish at the World Championships in Kona in October.
And his finish time in Kona, 8:48:18. Quite impressive. With splits 56 minutes and 31 seconds on the swim, 30th in his age group for that. 4:48 on the bike, with 12th in his age group, and a sub 3 hour marathon, 2:57, second in his age group for the run.
So Devin, you passed a lot of people on the course, right? So on the bike, you really definitely put the power down. And then, just a few years ago, running a sub 3 hour marathon was not very many pros were doing it. So that was an incredible run on a very tough day. And we'll just remind the audience. So 25 to 29 age group, he was racing on Thursday, which arguably maybe was a tougher day, but we'll find all more information about that when we go through the race. But welcome, Devin, to the podcast again. Why don't we start off with just learning about you? So where are you from? Where you train? You can't see it in the podcast, but he's an everyman jack athlete. So anything you can share about that, we'd love to hear about it.
Yeah. So I am a Oregon native. I was born in Corvallis, Oregon, went all the way through high school there, did a variety of sports growing up, mostly team sports, nothing related to triathlon really at all. Graduated high school doing soccer, cross country, alpine ski racing, and track. Then I went to college down in California at Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, and that's where I started triathlon. When I switched from doing all the team sports in high school to looking at what I wanted to do in college, I saw a video of Kona as I was surfing the internet. And I was like, wow, that looks pretty cool. Maybe I'll try this. Having, you know, no idea of what it takes to even qualify for Kona, let alone do a triathlon in general. So, sure. Leading into school, I basically signed up for a triathlon to see if it was something I was going to like, because I knew Cal Poly had a very large triathlon team at the school for a club sport. So I thought, before I jump into that, I might actually want to see if it's something I like doing. So I entered my first triathlon on all of about 2 weeks of training, and it went terribly.
So you had a running background. Alpine skiing, is that downhill? Is that like the Olympics?
Yeah,
where they go? Yeah, okay. All right. So that's an incredibly high speed sport, which, you know, I know that there are professional cyclists in the Tour de France that have done alpine skiing in the past. So that probably helps a little bit. But what about swimming? Was there any kind of real swimming background, club swimming when you were youth, anything like that?
Yeah, I did the Corvallis aquatic team growing up until about fifth grade, until double days really became more of a thing. And once I wasn't very good at swimming to begin with, and I liked doing so many other activities, it really took up a lot of time.
It's nice to hear that you did it through up until fifth grade. And now, I mean, you're a 56 minute Ironman swimmer. So that some of that is carried over, right?
There's no better sport than swimming, right? For like from an endurance perspective or translating really to any sport, like swimming is only going to help you. So
it's tough, especially when you're small and our pool is outdoors and, you know, it's raining and terrible in Oregon and you just freeze. Yeah. It's not very fun.
Yeah.
We don't have a ton of collegiate triathlon teams near us. So how does that look now? I mean, I guess this was in just a few years ago, right? That you raced. How competitive was it? Did you guys go to nationals? Obviously, by the time you left, did you kind of already see that you were going to be a top age group athlete by the time you finished college?
I would say it was a very unique experience, especially in California compared to other regions around the U.S. Our race season is really long because California has basically nice weather year round. And the team was huge. When I joined as a freshman, I believe it was the largest team in the country at almost 180 people, which
that's
is
awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah,
great.
It was like a perfect developing ground to, you know, get into it because you have people. Most of the people that were on the team were people like me that had absolutely no experience, but they did one of the three sports in high school and they just wanted a community and a new challenge. And it wasn't necessarily about being fast or being competitive and more about just having fun, staying active, and, you know, taking away some school stress with a nice, healthy stress reliever.
Sure.
But yeah, we went to nationals. There's a collegiate club national championship every year. It rotates around the country to different venues. It's all sprint and Olympic. And at collegiate nationals, the sprint race is draft legal. And then they have an Olympic race the next day. And also on that day, a mixed team relay, which if you ever get a chance to participate in that, it is by far the most fun type of triathlon you can do. It's just
fun.
Yeah,
absolute chaos.
Saw it in the Olympics, right? So it's pretty similar.
Yeah.
And I think anytime you're on a team sport, you put in so much more effort, right? You don't want to let the team down, and you can see that on the athlete's face when they finish the race.
It kind of reminds me. So Mike and I don't know, we kind of dipped our toes into triathlon actually with a duathlon. So it was just a run bike. And I told him about this. I'm like, I think you have to sign up as a team. I didn't realize one person could do both parts.
Yeah.
So I did the run, he did the bike, and then I finished with the run. I thought that's the way that you were supposed to do it. So that was a long time ago.
This was, maybe 2014, right when
I think it was 2012. Even.
Oh, yeah. Even before we did our first big races. So
we learned a lot.
So Devin, tell us, for Ironman, do you have a coach? Tell us about your coach. I think you're also a coach as well. So what is it like having a coach, and what do you find most beneficial about having?
Yeah. So I did most of my collegiate career basically coaching myself and doing our team workouts. And then when I got on Everyman Jack in my senior year of college, I got introduced to all the guys on the team, and a lot of them had coaches and they had all sorts of connections with different coaching companies and alike. And one of the guys on the team was like, "Hey, what do you do for training? Like, who's running your programs?" And I was like, "That's kind of just like me and the other students at Cal Poly, and just mix and match whatever fits my schedule and whatever I think is good." And he was like, "Hey, I think you should take the next step and get real coaching." And so I've been coached by him ever since. His name's Matt Hurley. He used to coach for Purple Patch Fitness, but now he owns his own coaching company called Wild Endurance. And I love it. It's really completely changed me as an athlete. I was reasonably competitive in college, but I went from being pretty good and competitive in college and really relying on my run to developing my bike and improving my swimming and really focusing on the longer distances.
And so being a coached athlete, I mean, we hear it a lot. People are like, get a coach, get a coach. Yeah. What do you feel like is the most, what changed the most when you did become a coached athlete? Was it, did you find out you were training too much, too hard, not enough? What was kind of the thing you noticed?
Yeah, I would say, I think I was a little bit more of a rare case per se, because I didn't train very much in college. I think I was averaging, 12 hours a week, which might be a lot to some people, but when you're trying to prepare for, say, an Ironman, if you can really up the volume a little bit, you're going to see some bigger gains over that distance, I think. And also, I just did way too many hard runs per week because that's what I enjoyed. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really do much cycling, and it showed.
Sure. Okay. Well, looking at your results, you've done all 70.3s up until this year, right? So when did you set your sights on Kona? And what race did you do that qualified you for Kona?
Yeah, I kind of went about Kona a little bit of a less direct, less obvious route, I would say. There's a race in Hawaii, 70.3 Honu, that has qualifying spots to Kona. And coming off a pretty strong 70.3 background, I figured that was likely my best shot to get a Kona slot. Because as I'm sure you've experienced yourself, an Ironman can go very wrong very quickly. It's kind of risky, especially if it's your first one. So I did Honu and I got a slot for Kona. This was back for the 2021 Kona, which was obviously canceled and pushed to St. George. And that's the reason I did St. George. But then since I used my Kona slot for St. George, I had to re-qualify at St. George and was very lucky to do that.
That's awesome. So your first full then was St. George Worlds.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's not easy. That's aggressive. Not an easy course.
It was aggressive.
What was most memorable about that race? I mean, obviously being your first Ironman, and just that race in general, what kind of do you remember from that?
Basically having no idea what I was doing and things going terribly wrong really quick.
But let's say, Devin, you did get third in your age group, right? So you got a podium. Yeah. So your first Ironman wasn't a total failure, but I know, I mean, in your mind, I'm sure you had bigger goals, but that's still a pretty incredible and pretty incredible first attempt at an Ironman. Yeah. On that course too.
Yeah. Right? Especially for the first one and on a really challenging course. If someone had told me going into the race, hey, you're going to finish third, I would have been absolutely like over the moon, super excited. And then seeing how the day went, there's like a little bit, of like, oh, if I could have changed this, if I could have done this, then things would have been different. But, it's all a learning experience. And at least for me, I think that's the big takeaway is Ironman is tough. And you never know what's going to happen. And you just have to focus on what you can control and hope things go in your favor. So going into St. George, I was back in Corvallis. It was actually snowing like 2 weeks before the race. So going from, cold winter environment straight to the middle of the desert where it was, I think it was like 100 degrees on race day, was quite a shock system. And I just didn't have my nutrition as dialed as I thought I did. It led to a lot of vomiting early on the run.
Oh, wow. Okay. So yeah. I'm assuming based on that, Kona is also a very hot race, right? You had the opportunity to train during the summer. What were some of those nutrition changes, or what did you learn nutritionally that could help you prepare for Kona?
Yeah. Historically, in the college race series, most of our national championships during my time there were in the South. So going into St. George, I was like, oh, you know, I do pretty well in the heat. I'm not too worried. What I didn't factor in is there's a big difference when you go from doing a 70.3 or a sprint or Olympic distance race to doing an Ironman. So I just took my 70.3 nutrition, doubled it, and added a little bit extra to, you know, compensate for the extra hours, and thought it was going to be okay. And it was not. So I learned the hard way that, at least for me, in an Ironman, really have to break up your fueling strategy. So instead of having super condensed bottles and chugging those like I normally do in a 70.3, for Kona, my strategy was pure water and then all bottles, so that they were completely separated. So if I had trouble drinking, I could just eat the gels, and vice versa. If I needed to drink more liquid, I wasn't going to flood my stomach with a bunch of carbs and, right, you know, get like bogged down.
Sure. So then were you taking water from every aid station, and then you carried your, was it Goo, or what is your gels of choice?
Yeah. Our team is sponsored by Goo, which is great. It's awesome. They have a whole bunch of tasty treats. But yeah, I did nothing but gels the whole day across, you know, each discipline, and then just water. And I was very aggressive on the amount of water, at least for me and my size. I was drinking 45 ounces of water an hour, bottles from every aid station, and basically chugging them.
Wow. All right. Well, that's good to know. And we're going to get into the race in Kona. I just thought it'd be a good opportunity to find out what you learned from that first Ironman race, and then transitioning into Kona. So the build for Kona, I didn't see any other 70.3 races this year. Did you have any other local races that you raced to kind of prep, or was it just put your head down and get the hours in?
Yeah, it was that second one. With, you know, Kona's a big trip, both in terms of flights and also money. So I put all my eggs into two baskets this year, one being St. George and one being Kona, and just put my head down in between, got to work, and tried to show up as prepared as possible to hopefully have a good result on the day.
And you did. So the swim in Kona. So Michelle and I went to Kona, Hawaii in July, and we got the opportunity to swim at the pier every day that we were there. And it was just unbelievable. Nice. It's just beautiful, beautiful water. You've done ocean swims in the past. And so tell me, so 56 minute swim on that day, which I thought was maybe potentially a little bit choppier. Did you have a current? Did you notice a current that day? Tell us about the specifics, racing, and your age group was last on the day, right? So you had to swim through all the other age groups, and you're at the, you know, the pointy end of that age group.
Yeah. I had been to Kona before in 2018, to support the team. I was the bag boy, doing whatever they needed to, you know, help the guys get ready. So I'd been in that water before and swam. And then I was also there 2 weeks before Kona three weeks before Kona with Zorro. So I got some open water swimming there too. And I can say that on race week, the water was more choppy than any day I had swam before. Not necessarily super choppy per se, like waves, but just a constant up and down motion. So you couldn't see buoys. You couldn't really see very far in front unless you,
from a couple people too. Like, they almost described it as hilly. Like, it was almost like a hilly swim, which is
exactly
interesting.
Yeah. That's a very good description of what it was like. It was basically, like going over little rollers, and you can, you know, peer out each time when you're at the top. Sure. But for me, I didn't really notice a current or anything. And thankfully I didn't have to fight anyone, you know, making my way through some of the age groups in front. I was fortunate to find feet pretty early on from a little train in my age group, and just sat on the back and kind of, you know, let the person on the front do the work of navigating through the field and sighting, and just kind of followed bubbles the whole time.
And what does your swim training look like? Let's say like the 3 months build into Kona, how many swims a week? What's your typical volume? Any key workouts that you can remember that you want to highlight?
Yeah. I think I was probably doing around 15, maybe 17, 18 K a week meters. I moved to Bend 2 months before Kona, and they have a beautiful open air 50 meter pool that gets set up long course on the weekends. So I think that's definitely advantage, getting less walls when you can.
Yeah.
And basically key swim sessions for me were nothing really special, to be honest. Our focus wasn't really on the swim. It was more developing on the bike, because as you can see from my St. George result, I lost like half an hour on the bike to some people. So I had a lot of room to make up. So the swimming was kind of more of a just maintaining fitness and building efficiency at my race pace versus trying to say like sharpen that and swim faster. It was more about just swimming what I could already swim even easier. So that revolved around doing, you know, 400 or 500 repeats at race pace or race intensity on shorter rest, with a couple days of top end sprint work just to keep things firing.
And would you say your pool race intensity pace is pretty close to your open water pace, or do you have a big drop off? Are you a good open water swimmer?
Yeah, I think I do get better actually in the open water. I think compared to the really good pool swimmers, that is, you know, with a little bit of chop and having to sight and navigating around people, I think that helps slow down the pure swimmers a little bit, at least, you know, in my age group, especially starting in the back, it can mess with their super nice ideal stroke. And since my stroke isn't that nice, maybe it helps me a little bit. I don't know. So my pace in the pool, I basically swim it right at what I'm trying to swim in the race. I don't do any like, oh, I'm going to swim faster in the pool because I don't know, it's easier. I just go by feel. And if it feels like race pace on the day, that's what I swim.
Yeah. I've got some buddies that I swim with that have, you know, college swimming background, pool swimming background. And they, when they do a flip turn and they do 3 dolphin kicks off the, I lose body lengths at that point.
It's just gone.
So that is, you know, it does inflate that pool time. If you have a really good flip turn and underwater kick. So, really a 56 minute swim is pretty incredible still. I mean, you're losing 5 or 6 minutes to the very top age groupers. And it looks like your focus on the bike paid off, right? So you had a good bike. You were right there in the thick of things and catching people. Mixed things about the Kona bike course. Obviously it's challenging. It can be windy. It is not overly hilly, but it's not very technical either. So what was your first experience of racing Kona, the first time on the island? What were your big takeaways on the bike?
I was shocked. I don't really know if there's another way to describe it. I had no idea if I was doing good or doing poorly. I just knew the numbers that I was trying to hit and the zone I was trying to stay in, and hope that on the day it was going to turn out to be competitive. My coach and I had gone into the race with a plan of swim as slow and as easy as you dare, and then bike as hard as you dare, kind of the reverse spectrum. Save that energy in the swim, spend big on the bike, and get off and hopefully still have run legs. So my experience on the bike, especially being a smaller athlete, it wasn't as windy as I thought it was going to be, which is good for me because otherwise I'd get pretty blown around. But I liked it. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. You're right, though. It's definitely not the most technical or interesting bike course. It's kind of just out and back.
Could you tell on the bike course, like where you were, like position wise, like who was around you? I mean, were you passing a ton of people just given the age groups that were out there?
Yeah. So at the beginning of the bike, it was just kind of like me by myself all the way to Javi, passing tons of people, which was to be expected given how the waves were and the ages in front of me. But I really didn't see anyone in my age group, but I also didn't get passed. I think I got passed by two people. I was like, okay, you know, it's not like 20 dudes are flying past me. It's only a couple people. So I must be riding at least okay. And then coming back down from Javi was when I was caught by a super strong dude from Estonia. And then we caught little groups of, say, three or four people at a time. And we'd ride up into that group, kind of go to the front, and then ride up to the next group. And that's when I knew about what place we were in. And I started getting more and more excited, realizing that, hey, this bike ride is actually going well. Like, I knew I was hitting the numbers I wanted and feeling good, but you just never know how on the day with wind and whatnot, if that's going to be competitive. So I knew at, say, mile 60-ish that I was roughly in 13th, which was something I never expected. So that was
I know every man Jack had, 20 plus guys out there.
And because 35.
You were racing 35. So you guys were racing on Thursday. That meant that there were a good amount of guys that weren't racing that day. Nobody was out of Javi to give splits. You didn't see anybody giving you splits really on the bike.
Yeah, we had so we had five people racing on the Thursday and then 30 racing on Saturday.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, which is just crazy. You can imagine what that run was like with 30 guys cheering you on.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, on the bike it was kind of just, you know, it is what it is. And if you get a split at Javi that you're, say, you know, 20 minutes down or 2 minutes down, you know, there's still so much of the day left. I'm not quite sure if that's something I would really take much stock of.
Right. Yeah. I think I've heard some other people talk about the Saturday men's race and the cycling dynamics that took place because there were so many men on the course riding at the same speed that there were some issues with not necessarily trying not to draft and having to do a lot of surging. You could really ride your power because there weren't many 25 to 29 year olds at that front part of the race that you had to worry about that. You had to worry about passing women, but you didn't necessarily have to worry about sitting in a draft or having to really push 350 watts or 340 watts to get past people. That wasn't part of your challenge. So on your same with swimming. So your what were some of your average volume per bike? You talked about your coach really focused on the bike after St. George. What did that look like?
That looked like basically no running, very little swimming, and all cycling. So I did probably 5-6 weeks of basically all cycling, doing three solid, I'd say, key interval sessions per week that broken down into sort of, you know, that like FTP sweet spot type thing. So two of those per week, and then a long ride also with intervals ranging from, say, 70.3 to Ironman intensity, which is a lot of time on the bike.
And what's your height and weight? You said you're a small guy. So what is that?
Yeah, I'm a little bit under 5'8". And unfortunately, I lost weight after St. George, which my coach wasn't very pleased at, but I'm like 140 pounds, something like 63.5 kilos.
Right. And approximately what is your FTP? What would you guess if you, I know we don't all do 20 minute FTP tests very often, but.
Yeah. If I had to guess, I would say it's probably around 300, maybe 305. It's not very high, actually. If you look at, well, that might sound very high, but if you look at the other people that biked a similar time to me, a lot of them have significantly better FTPs in terms of just pure numbers and then also watts per kilo. I know a guy that outbiked me by, I think it was like 2 minutes, and he's definitely cracking 5 watts per kilo FTP. And I think I'm only like 4.8 or something. So not that that's little, but you know, it's
no, not at all.
there's definitely a difference.
So would you say for your bike training, where you're located, are you able to get outside a lot, especially through like the summer months, or do you do quite a bit of training on Zwift? Does it depend on the workout or the day, obviously?
Yeah. I, going into St. George, did every single bike ride on the trainer, including like 5-6 hour rides, which
that's impressive.
Not fun, but you know, when it's 40 degrees and raining all day, every day for months, yes, you don't really have a choice, or at least I'm not prepared to ride outside in those conditions. But moving to Bend was, I think, directly correlated to a significant increase in my cycling ability, because every single ride was outside. I rode the trainer once, only to do a sweat test. That was cool. And it was also hot, like 95 every day in Bend, no clouds, which is kind of ideal. It's basically like built-in heat training and beautiful cycling weather.
Yeah.
Yeah. Michelle and I follow that triathlon life, Eric. And
yeah.
We see the unbelievable training that is the not only the mountain bike trails, the gravel, the roads look great. So do you spend most of your time on the tri bike? What is your go-to bike that you ride?
Yeah, I spent basically every ride on my TT bike, just not because I think it's really necessary. It's just I could frankly carry more water bottles. There's a lot of places around, especially there's a pretty, like, I'd say a Bend famous bike route that is called the Bachelor Loop. It's around Mount Bachelor, and there's maybe 2 water stops, and it's, you know, a 5-6 hour ride. So especially when you go up to, you know, 4,000 to 6,000 feet and it's 95 degrees, you need a lot of water. So I was using my TT bike just to carry as much of that as I could. And I also enjoy riding it. It's not uncomfortable to me, and I think the felt handles really well. Also, the roads are pretty straight, so it's not really an issue anyways. But yeah, I definitely have a road bike and enjoy some more, say, traditional style of pure cycling where you do some, you know, hot corners, or, you know, you take it off road a little bit and just have fun.
That's awesome. So you finish your bike in Kona. You start your run. How are you feeling at that point?
Fantastic.
All the bike training is helped, right?
Yeah, it paid off. I actually rode every hour harder than the previous hour. So I built the entire bike ride, which was sort of the plan going in, but you know, we weren't actually sure if I was going to be able to do that, especially once you start getting into hour 4. But things were clicking, and that's when I knew the last 10 miles of the bike to just really focus on setting up a good run, making sure I got absolutely all my nutrition on board, drank all the extra water I could. So that way, when I got off the bike, I was fully stocked up and ready to run. Yeah, getting off within the first half mile, no vomiting, so that's a huge plus over St. George. And then through that first 5K was hold back, keep it easy, let the day come to you type thought process.
Do you pay attention to heart rate? I mean, did you probably had a pace in mind, anything that you were kind of keeping an eye on?
Yeah, especially in training. we use heart rate a lot as kind of, you know, the guide for keeping the easy. And then on, say, an interval session, it's all about pace. I have a lactate meter, like, you know, everyone else nowadays. So that kind of guides the pace in training. So on race day, I kind of knew what heart rate ranges were going to be sustainable based on lactate production and also what paces. So getting off the bike and starting the run, I had more or less a heart rate limit that I wasn't supposed to go over, and it kind of just went out the window.
Well, I know that on the Leahy Drive, it's shaded a little bit. It's pretty yep. flat, and they shortened that little out and back portion of the Leahy Drive, right? And you came and then you head up Palani and turn left on the Queen K, and then things really heat up. Did you have any low points during that run at all, or was it all going pretty much to plan?
Yeah, so the first, I think it's a little bit over 10K on Elite E Drive, was both super fun and also terrifying. I say that because I was looking at my heart rate and it was over the heart rate cap already, but it felt really good and I was running really fast. So I was kind of doing exactly what my coach told me not to do and gambling early.
And that's a lot, right? When you say that you didn't really have a whole lot of run training going into this, you trusted that you had the bike legs, but your run training maybe you didn't have the right as much volume or intensity.
I was very confident in my run going in, even with, say, taking, we'll call it 2 months after St. George off of running. But I had hit some large key workouts on the run and was feeling like, you know, if I had the day I knew I was capable of, I was pretty confident it would be under 3 hours. I had no idea everyone else was also going to run under 3 hours. That was yeah. pretty shocking. And it just shows the level of, you know, everyone in general. It's just getting so high now and it's being competitive. But yeah.
At the pro level and the age group level, there are just yeah. some really fast people. And one thing that I look at and think is pretty impressive is your age group, the 25 to 29, has yeah. some really fast Americans in it. If you look at if you yeah. do a sort and you look at all the Americans that finished, you know, the 25 to 29, you guys had three in the top five. Other age group saw that. So that's pretty cool.
In my personal opinion, going to the race, first place was already locked in. Like Marquard is just an incredible athlete. And unless it was his race to lose, if he came out and executed a day close to what he was capable of, no one was going to touch that. And then it was just up to Justin and myself to hopefully get on the podium and put three US guys on the podium. I mean,
you guys did it.
Cool. I don't know if that's ever been done in any age group. I'm not yeah. like,
we'll have to look into that. Yeah, I'll have to put that in the show notes if that's the case. Cause that's, I mean, we didn't see it in the other age group. I know Eric yeah. Engel got third. I will have to dig through it to see if there were any other men that finished in the top three of their age groups, but we'll look at that.
Yeah.
What about like did you energy lab? Did you ever get any low moments during that portion, or would you say your heat training was great and you felt strong?
Yeah, there was definitely a large low period. I don't even know if it would be called a moment. It was probably over an hour of just questioning everything, basically. That really strong cyclist that caught me coming down Javi, we ended up getting off the bike together. His name's Timo. He's from Estonia. He's an absolute weapon. And he actually ran up and passed me at roundabout mile 11, maybe. We had just gotten up to Palani, turned left, and started running on the highway. It's probably around mile 11, but he actually passed me, which, I mean, I was pretty shocked because I knew I was running really fast. It's Kona. I probably should have expected, to get past, but yeah. We went back and forth for over 10 miles. Like it was soul crushing, absolutely soul crushing. Cause you'd get gapped and then you'd be like 20 seconds behind and you just stare at their back for like 5K. And then I would close him out. I would gap him. And then he would come back and it was just this constant battle.
Where's like your headspace during this? Are you like, trying to keep yourself engaged and motivated? Like what do you use from a mental perspective to kind of get you through those?
Yeah, I'd say, I don't know. I don't think I'm the best at that type of thing. It's pretty much a constant battle with myself about, am I going to quit basically or not? Which I wish I could say I have like more of a definitive process or like a tool set in that area. Every time I had gapped him running into the energy lab and down and through, and then leaving the energy lab, he had caught me again. And getting caught that late in the race after I had probably 40 seconds on him at the turnaround at the bottom of the energy lab. So he made up a significant amount of time in about, 2 miles maybe, which is just a huge effort. But we were running shoulder to shoulder, Iron War style, that constant back and forth. And the whole time is who's going to crack first.
It's pretty fun. And it sounds like, you don't always get that in an Ironman race where there's somebody going at the same pace at the same effort. And I think that says something about your, level of competitiveness that probably helped you push a little bit harder during those times. And I would probably argue that you probably do have some mental tools that you tap into because of all the wins that you've had in 70.3s. You've had to go through some low points and push yourself through those moments where you say you're going to quit. I think when we talk to a lot of these athletes that have finished at the top level in Kona, all of them are doing very similar workouts physically. Yeah. They're all very fit. Some of the biggest differences are between you and someone that finished 8th or 10th in the age group might be that mental side and the ability to suffer more than anybody else and not walk or not slow the pace down to make it feel easier,
Yeah. I just had like half a step on him for 2 miles from somewhere between, we'll say 14 to 16, mile 14 to mile 16. And I just told myself, like, your friends and family put so much into this. You got to respect it.
Yeah. It just impressed. I mean, I know emotions run high in Ironman and it's we live it, right? We train every day. We push ourselves. We don't go out to the bars and we don't do things that other people would do for fun. We choose to train and suffer. And when things go right, it's a huge reward. And it certainly did during your race. So tell me, you're going down the Queen K, you're battling with the Estonian, and you turn right onto Palani to finish the run. The crowds, the emotion, the support from every man, Jack. I mean, I'd love to hear your perspective of that last, whatever it is, whatever, 6-7 minutes of that run.
Yeah. So rewinding a little bit to set it up, around mile 16, I just decided, it's now or never. And I attacked him 3 times with like, 3 surges each time he closed me out. And I was like, okay, we're going to be doing this all the way to the finish. And coming from running track in high school and, you know, I was on like the 4x4 relay team. So I knew I had hopefully enough leg speed to outsprint him at the end if it came to that. But I passed some of the EMJ guys standing out on the highway around like mile 17, or no, further than that, because the top of Polani is like 25. So this is all the way to mile like 24 is where I saw those guys. And they just told me, they're like, hey, you have 35 seconds on him. And I looked back and all of a sudden he, like, there was a gap. So then running up that last little bit to the top of Polani was staying strong, keeping on the pace. And then I cramped really bad. I got a full hamstring cramp and actually had to stop and stretch it out. So at that point I was like, I just worked so hard and he's going to close it back out. But I think he also went through a rough patch running up that hill because the gap actually went out. So running down Polani and around that little bump out and then down the finish chute on Elite E Drive was just incredible. There was so much EMJ support, so much just support in general from, you know, people I have no idea yelling like, go EMJ, come on. Like, you have X amount of time. And yeah, running down the finish chute was, I hope you get to experience it. It's an incredible experience.
Yeah. I'm going to do everything I can to finish, next October, but,
yeah,
let's talk about that finish. So you did finish ahead of Timo, by 58 seconds. You got him by a minute, right? So you held him off. But there's a video that I saw of the finish line and you coming across. Was that you that picked up, you finished and you walked back and you helped the lady that was cramping cross the finish line?
Yeah, I did. Right before getting, you know, they have that like ramp that you run up, you finish at that kind of peak. Right before rounding the corner and getting there, the fans had switched from, say, like cheering and going like, congrats, congrats, to like vigorously pointing and yelling. Which at the time, given the battle with Timo, I thought that meant he was closing me out.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, sure.
So I started, you know, like running faster and like being like, oh crap, I'm going to get caught, like, you know, 20 feet before the finish. And then rounded that last corner, ran up the ramp and saw the athlete, you know, not looking like they were in a good place and you know, needing help. So yeah. I crossed the finish line to make sure I finished at the place where I had fought all day to finish.
Yeah.
And then, immediately turned around and asked if she needed help.
Yeah.
And then you cramped immediately after helping her, right? I think I saw pictures of you having a very difficult time getting off that ramp.
Yeah. I still don't know how I did that. I think it was just, you know, you see someone that needs help and you have all the crowd yelling and you just, you know, right, you could do just things you never thought you could do.
Right. Just instinctual to go, go help.
Well, exactly.
I mean, it showed a lot, spoke a lot to your character too, to help that individual get across.
Yeah. We don't need to go too much into the run training, unless there was something specific that you learned during that build up, that helped you, run, a sub-3 hour, marathon off of that bike. Can you give us about what your weekly mileage was? What your, let's say like your threshold pace. I know you said you use lactate. What was your threshold pace going into that run, or approximate?
Yeah. I'm actually, unfortunately, like not too sure on the exact, paces and stuff, because going from Corvallis at sea level to Bend at roughly 4,000 feet, it really kind of just completely threw everything out the window for me in terms of pace, because obviously you know you can't run as fast at altitude. But I think In the final month going in, I was doing my threshold reps around 5:10 per mile, something like that, up at altitude.
Yeah.
So,
but, and that is with a lactate of approximately what? What was your lactate on those threshold?
Yeah, like 1.7, something around there. I mean, it's very... Yeah,
I've got some work to do. That's pretty
you never
amazing.
Know, right? Like, everyone's different.
Yep.
You can't really compare. It's just like power, right? Like, I rode 209 watts, which, I mean, for most of the people I know is like their easy ride.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But
I mean, you must have an aero position. You must have, you know, everything optimized and you're a smaller frame. So you're able to move through the air pretty well.
Yeah. And everyone's meter is different. Like,
yeah, that's true.
I know mine is 8% low. So I think it was more like 225, 230. Yeah. But even that, you know, that number is probably not as impressive. I know other dudes that biked similar times to me and they're riding 270, 280, which, you know, sounds more professional.
Well, you know, again, congrats on the finish, finishing second in your age group and really running down the field and having an awesome run. The next part of the podcast, we'd love to ask you some fun questions.
It's just fun talking about all this.
It is. And, and I think, I mean, I can see how passionate you are. And I think the audience is hopefully learning something about you in this process and, you gain some more followers and a lot more, I mean, age groupers deserve respect and,
absolutely.
Hopefully we can get some more people paying attention. So
just for some fun questions, if you could spend a day training with like a professional triathlete, who would be the person you'd love to spend a day training with?
Fortunately, going into Kona, I was invited to train with Chelsea Sodaro.
Oh geez. All right.
For 2 weeks in Kona, the month before the race, which that was, as you can imagine, that was just an absolutely like once in a lifetime incredible experience. And I'm sure everyone knows how that turned out for her. So getting to train with someone who then became world champion, it's hard to beat that. So I'd have to go with Chelsea.
So you already lived your dream. That's awesome.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you have any pre-race routines? Do you have any lucky charms that you carry? No, like a hat, like Gustav. Anything?
Yeah. Hat was too strong for the island, man. It's too strong. I would say I'm kind of like less regimented than I think most of the triathletes. I kind of just eat whatever I want pre-race, and then as far as pre-race breakfast, it's either, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, like white bread, oatmeal, sports drink and bars. Just make sure it's, you know, are focused and easily digestible. So usually race night I'll have like a pizza or some big pasta dish, something like that.
What about like a favorite piece of gear that either you used for this race or for training? Anything stick out?
Yeah. Probably my old Garmin 9, I think it's a 920 XT, the little brick one. That was my first ever like true GPS watch for triathlon that I got in my second year of triathlon in college. And it was pretty cool to use that again in Kona because of how my hand position was. The larger Garmin's like the, you know, 530 or 1030 is what I have, but it doesn't actually fit between my arms. So I used the little watch. They have a little twist adapter mount, so it sits right there. And that was kind of like a cool, you know, like full circle moment, like a little nostalgia.
That is pretty cool. I had the same watch, the blue and black version.
Yep,
and
exactly.
So you use that as your bike computer because it's smaller than anything else and reads power and everything else, right?
Yep. It's
that's
the smallest thing I had that actually connects to power. So
right.
Cool.
That is awesome. So what is one piece of advice? So you think of an age group athlete who is trying to qualify for Kona. They've been close. What's one piece of advice that you give them to help them get that?
Get that qualification.
Kona. Right.
Relax. The more pressure you put on yourself, the more you build it up, the more pre-race jitters you have, the more chances that day is probably not going to go as you want. Just staying relaxed the whole time is going to do you so much good. You know, try to stay really positive. Things are not going to go the way you want. The race is never over. You drop your nutrition early. Just take a deep breath and focus on what you have to do to, you know, stick to your, whatever your nutrition goal was using on course. The day will come when it's meant to come, and don't force it.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of people that put all their eggs in certain baskets, and they feel like that's the only thing that they can do is race to try to qualify for Kona. And then usually what happens is they don't qualify, and then they kind of say, you know what, I'm just going to race because I enjoy training, and all of a sudden they qualify. They take the pressure off themselves. So
I appreciate
that advice. We don't always hear that. So.
Right. And I think it is too, like who's going to adapt the best, right? Not everything's going to go perfectly. There's going to be things that happen, and the people who can adapt to those things you just can't predict are going to be the ones that come out with a good result. So, what's next for you? Do you have your sights on race season next year? Do you have big goals for next year?
Yeah, I am totally undecided at this point. Going into the race, I gave myself three options, right? So I'd only done, including Kona, two races the entire year, none of which at the 70.3 distance, which is, I would say, my preferred distance currently. It's just a little easier. You know, you're done so much earlier in the day.
I totally agree.
It's just nice.
Totally agree with
less,
that.
less can go wrong too, right? Like you said,
and if it does go wrong, And if it does go wrong, you know, you're not walking an entire marathon, like, you know. But yeah, what's next? We'll see. If I can improve my swim, drop a couple minutes, that will open up some more doors for me in the future. Maybe I'll try my hand at, you know, racing in that elite field. If I can swim in the pack, if not, you know, I have no problem, you know, continuing doing what I'm doing and try to do more races, as an amateur next year, maybe do like Finland or potentially even return to Kona. And hopefully all the men will be on, the men's day, and they will fill the women's field with women.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, you know.
Yeah. I think there's still a lot up in the air. I think that is the goal. We will have to wait and see how everything pans out. I know there's a lot of news about potentially Kona not wanting two races again in the future. So we'll have to wait and see. So Devin, where can any listeners continue to follow your journey? What are some social medias? Do you have a blog, or do you have anything where people can follow you?
Yeah, they can follow me at Devin Volk, all one word, on Instagram. You can also just DM me if you want coaching, or DM my coach, or email my coach at Wild Endurance. He's a great dude, excellent coach, no complaints.
Well, we had a great time chatting with you. We look forward to following your journey and possibly seeing you next year in Kona. And you'll be well ahead of me, but we'll, you know, hopefully I'll see you sometime around midnight.
We'll see. Anything can happen. You never know. But yeah, thank you guys very much for having me on. Really enjoyed talking with you. And
cool.
Yeah, well, enjoy. Hopefully you get a bit of an off season and you get to take some time to do some
definitely.
Other things you enjoy. And
I'm going to be skiing a lot.
Cool.
Thank you for listening to Mission Kona Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
Do you know an athlete who has a great story for a future podcast? Send us a message at missionkonapodcast.com.
Reach out anytime through our website or on Instagram at Mission Kona Podcast.
Till next time, think positive, have fun, and stay focused on your mission to Kona.